Good morning. Here to make a few announcements today. The first one is that I have accepted Bill Baroni's resignation as the Deputy Executive Director of the Port Authority, effective today. And I'm here to announce that Deborah Grimiccioni will be the new Deputy Executive Director of the Port Authority. Deb has been a trusted advisor to me for 10 years, and I appreciate her willingness to step forward and take on this new assignment from me. Before she came to work for me in the state government, Deb has a long track record of getting results in the world of law enforcement and taking on really difficult tasks that I've assigned to her and others have assigned to her as well. First met Deb in 2002 when I became U.S. Attorney, and she was already an Assistant United States Attorney for the District of New Jersey in the Special Prosecutions Division, which was the area that handled public corruption in our former office. And she worked for me there from January of 2002 through November of 2005. In the fall of that, of 2004, I promoted Deb from her position in the Special Prosecutions Division to become the chief of the Commercial Crimes Unit. She left my employ in the fall of 2005 to go to the Department of Justice in Washington and continued working there on issues of public interest by supervising the department's prosecutions under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. She then came home to New Jersey to serve as the director of the Division of Criminal Justice in the Office of the Attorney General in the Corzine administration under Attorney General Ann Milgram, where she oversaw all criminal investigations and prosecutions brought by the state of New Jersey. In January of 2010, I asked Deb to come with me into the governor's office and made her the director of the authorities unit, where she served from January of 2010 to 2012. And then since January of 2012, she has served as my deputy chief of staff for policy and cabinet liaison. She undertook the difficult task of overtaking an authorities unit that had not seen any significant supervision over the outside authorities in years. And she took the steps that we worked on together to be able to make sure that we took more control of the independent authorities. Specifically, she identified, reduced, and eliminated many of the perks at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey for their employees that were not available to the general public, including free or reduced tolls and free ridership on the PATH trains, bringing accountability to the performance-based bonus system they had there, sick time payouts, use of official Port Authority vehicles, company credit cards, paid holidays, employee contributions towards health insurance and retirement plans, and abolished the practice of free tolls for non-work-related travel for Port Authority employees. And her work at the authorities unit was much broader than just on the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Some of the vetoes that she prepared for my consideration and which I executed were the 2011 veto of the operating budget of the New Jersey Redevelopment Authority because it contained a 3% raise for staff, as well as additional funds to an employee gift program, the budgets for the DRBA, the Waterfront Commission of New York and New Jersey, the New Jersey Racing Commission, and the Maritime Pilots and Docking Pilots Commission when they acted against the interests of the taxpayers. 2011 expenditures that had been ratified by the board of the DRPA because the payments were made under a contract that had not been competitively bid, and excessive spending practices at the Turnpike Authority and the Higher Education Student Assistance Authority, as well as the DRPA on spending issues as well. So based on the recommendations that Deb made to me, I've also eliminated other egregious and longstanding practices at these authorities. In August 2010, I ordered the DRPA to enact 16 sweeping reforms, all of which were passed by the end of that year. Also called upon the Turnpike Authority and the South Jersey Transportation Authority to eliminate the longstanding practice of allowing their employees to cash in sick and vacation days on an annual basis at authority expense, and ended bonuses to employees based on longevity and other factors not closely tied to performance. Those practices were eliminated at Deb's direction with my authority in November of 2010, and together we worked on the sweep out of the board and the practices of the Passaic Valley Sewage Commission, immediately suspended and ultimately accepted the resignations of six of the seven commissioners at the PVSC, leading to executive orders installing new leadership at the PVSC to the reduced costs to the ratepayers who work or get service, rather, from the PVSC, and has led, I think, to the great recovery that has happened for the PVSC in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. So I'm sending to the Port Authority somebody who has been one of my most trusted friends and advisors for the last 10 years. And my instruction to her is the instruction that I have given to her in every task I've asked her to undertake for me, to use her best judgment, to put integrity first, and to make sure that she makes the tough decisions that need to be made in order to make sure that the taxpayers of this state, and in the case of the Port Authority, the toll payers of the region, are protected and respected. I want to thank Senator Barone for his 4 years of service to the people of the state and of the region, and I look forward to changes that will result from Deb's leadership, along with Chairman Sampson and the other commissioners of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. So I'm going to introduce Deb to make some remarks, and then I'll come back to take your questions. Thanks, Deb.
I would just like to thank the governor for his continued faith in me. It has been an honor to work for the governor the past 10 years, first as an assistant U.S. attorney, then as director of the authorities unit, and now as deputy chief of staff. I also want to thank my policy team. I'm going to miss all of you. And I'm ready to get to work. Thank all of you.
Thanks, sir. Questions?
Senator
Barone offered his resignation, and I accepted it. But this was nothing that I hadn't planned already. For those of you who listened to me carefully, and I suspect most of you do, when I announced my changes to my chief of staff side of my governor's office and announced Amy Craddock as the policy chief, I said that Deb was going to continue in government but in a different capacity. I'd already made the decision at that time to send Deb to the Port Authority. I was waiting to make the announcement to do it with the other front office announcements I intend to make next week. But when Senator Barone offered his resignation, I accepted it and figured I might as well just say Deb's the person who's going there. So that's why I accepted his resignation, because he offered it. And I already had planned, and he knew I had planned to replace him a while back with Deb. And so that was no surprise to him. But he offered his resignation now, and I accepted it because I thought it was the appropriate thing to do, given all the distraction that's going on. David? Cruz. David Cruz. I'm sorry, David. I'll get to you.
With two resignations in about a week, you still think that this Port Authority thing is just a Wisniewski obsession?
Yeah, listen, I think that the politics of it is, because the fact is that's what Senator Barone said when he testified in front of Assemblyman Wisniewski's committee, was that a mistake was made. And I think the senator admitted that from the testimony I heard, that they believed the traffic study needed to be done, but that they didn't do it appropriately or correctly within the protocols of the Port Authority and give the appropriate notices. And he apologized for that. So I never said that a mistake wasn't made, but what I said was that all of the other politics swirling around it was created and manufactured. But the mistake was made. People make mistakes, David, as soon as I'm done. And mistakes are made. And when mistakes are made, people have to be held accountable for them. And Senator Barone went in front of the committee and took responsibility for the fact that he did not follow the protocols that exist at the Port Authority in approving the traffic study that was recommended by Mr. Wildstein. And so he's taken responsibility for that, as well he should, because he's the lead person for New Jersey at the port, and he's the one who approved it at Mr. Wildstein's request. So, I still think it's a whole lot of hullabaloo, but, you know, people who make mistakes take responsibility for them. But that does not discount the really great work that Senator Barone has done over the last 4 years at the Port Authority, and I appreciate his hard work for that. And as I said, this was a change I was going to make anyway in the normal course of the transition, and had alluded to that, whatever that was, about a week or so ago, when I announced the changes in the front office staff, but did not identify what Deb's next assignment was going to be, because I wanted to do things in a certain order. You had a follow-up.
Yeah, so to be clear, at no point did you instruct anybody to close lanes into the GWB, and at no point did you tell anybody to do that to get back to the mayor?
Absolutely not. In fact, I have to tell you the truth, David, I don't have any recollection of ever having met the mayor of Fort Lee in my 4 years. I may have, at some Bergen County event or something. He was not somebody that was on my radar screen in any way, politically, professionally, or in any other way, until these stories came out in the aftermath of the closing. So, yeah, the answer is absolutely unequivocally not. As I said, I think Senator Barone has admitted that the way they conducted the traffic study that was suggested by Mr. Wildstein was done, in a mistaken way. And he's taken responsibility for that. And that's it. David Matthau.
Since then, we've gotten stories where a traffic study was requested, lanes closures were requested, some people knew about it, other people didn't, there was a confusion about this. It seems to suggest that there's something very dysfunctional about the Port Authority. What's your sense of that, and do you still think they're not out of control?
Well, listen, I don't think they're out of control, because I think there's a lot of things they're doing, David, that they're doing extraordinarily well. There are multiple major construction projects that are being undertaken under the supervision of the Port Authority, and in the main, I think, being done very well, whether you talk about the World Trade Center, the Pulaski Skyway, the helix at the Lincoln Tunnel, the Bayonne Bridge, Route 440. All those things are being done under Port Authority supervision, and I think being done, as from the reports I've gotten, very well. So I think the core mission of the Port Authority is being done well. I know when stories like this come out and they become sensationalized, the easiest thing to say is they're out of control. I don't sense that they're out of control. Does that mean they're mistake-free? No. And as someone has pointed out recently, this is a huge governmental entity with a budget that's bigger than many states' budgets. So there are going to be mistakes made, just like there's mistakes made in state government on a regular basis. What matters is how you respond to the mistakes, not whether you make them or not, because we're human and people are going to make mistakes. And I think that's what Senator Barone has said in his testimony to Assemblyman Wisniewski. So I would still be reluctant to paint with a broad brush that it's an out-of-control agency. I don't believe so. And in fact, if you look at the independent audit report that was done and ordered by Governor Cuomo and I think they commend both Governor Cuomo and I for a lot of the changes we have made to the Port Authority and the things that management has done there. So there's always more work to do. But, yeah, I'll still stick with it's not an out-of-control agency.
Could I follow up?
Sure.
In listing Deb's credentials, there was a lot of reference to her cleaning up various agencies and situations that she's been involved with. Are you looking for her to clean up the Port Authority?
I'm looking for her to be her, which will be more than the Port Authority can handle, I guarantee you. It's been plenty for me to handle for the last 10 years, and it'll be more than the Port Authority can handle. I emphasize those things because that's who she is. When you introduce a person who has been an integral part of this administration, but a low-key part of the administration publicly, many of you in this building know Deb and have gotten to know her a bit and know the work that she's done for me and how great she's been, but the general public wouldn't know her. In fact, I heard a story the other day talking about how no one's ever heard Kevin O'Dowd speak in a microphone before a week ago. So for those of us who spend our lives in this building, we tend to assume, myself included, that everybody who's so integral to the operation of government is known by everybody, and they're not. And so my introduction of Deb was not meant to be anything other than a recitation of what I think her strengths were and her particular expertise in dealing with independent authorities, which is what she did exclusively for me for 2 years, I think, with great success. And so I want to give you and the public you report to comfort that the person I'm sending over there is a really highly competent, qualified, and accomplished professional who knows a bit about what she's walking into, and despite that, she's taking it. So, that was the reason for the introduction. Matt?
Why did you or somebody from your office kind of call Governor Cuomo and ask him to...
The story is categorically wrong. I did not have that conversation with Governor Cuomo in any way, shape, or form, and Governor Cuomo didn't have it with me. So, And when the story came out yesterday, I called him and said, did we talk about this? And he said, no. And I said, I didn't think so. Good. I want to make sure I'm not going crazy. So the story was wrong.
Did you then talk to him about it when you called him yesterday?
No, we pretty much got off the phone after that.
So you guys haven't spoken about this issue
No, Governor, and let me just say this. I am going to keep to my longstanding policy and his longstanding policy that we don't talk about the content of our conversations unless someone, some third party who was not involved in any conversations we've had, mischaracterizes it to all of you. And then I think we both feel it incumbent upon us to clear that up. But otherwise, I'm not going to get into the specifics of what I talked to Governor Cuomo about, whether it's about, you know, the stuff you all were asking me about 2 weeks ago or the stuff you're asking me about now. Safe to say, as he said, that Governor Cuomo and I speak on a regular basis, and I'm glad that we do. It's different than the relationship I had with Governor Patterson. Governor Cuomo and I speak on a regular basis about issues of mutual concern, and we have a very good relationship, and I'm happy that we do, because it helps to make things go much more smoothly in the relationships between the two states. Angie.
Governor, can you say with certainty that someone else didn't, on your staff or on your administration, act on your behalf to order those lane closures for political retribution?
Yeah, I have absolutely no reason to believe that, Angie, and I've made it very clear to everybody on my senior staff that if anyone had any knowledge about this, that they needed to come forward to me and tell me about it, and they've all assured me that they don't.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, yeah. I've spoken to Mr. Stepien, who's the person in charge of the campaign, and he has assured me the same thing.
And if I may ask
two follow-ups.
Just one. Is Mr. Wilson still on the payroll?
No, he's not. He's off the payroll as of today. Terry.
Governor, prior to this, I think most people thought that the two governors appointed their choices, which were then melded into one common team or one agency. But it's kind of come out that, yeah, if he was my guy, I would have fired him. Do you plan to see any kind of change internally to that culture?
No, I think, listen, because I think there are different interests of the two states, right? Some of the things, Terry, we have in common, and some things are particularly of interest to New York or New Jersey. And so it's the nature of a bi-state agency. And so I'm not going to tell Governor Cuomo what he should or shouldn't be doing with the folks that he appoints, whether it's commissioners or the executive director, in the same way that he wouldn't tell me, instruct me to do anything like that. Now, we'll always have, and I've always had, open conversations with each other where we share opinions with each other. But I think we're very respectful of the sovereignty of the two states, despite the fact that we share a bi-state agency, and I think we need to continue to be respectful of that. And so if we give advice to each other as colleagues and friends, that's one thing, but we shouldn't be instructing each other to do things with regard to the agency, because I think then that gets over a line which may violate the sovereignty and the sovereign interests of your own individual state. And my first obligation is to the people here in New Jersey and doing things that I think are in their best interests. Michael. Michael, I can only tell you what Senator Barone has said publicly and to everybody in this office, was that they believed a traffic study was necessary and that they ordered it, but that the way they did it was mistaken and they didn't follow protocols. And the fact is, one of the things that I think that I heard in listening to some of the testimony was that, you know, you heard one of the professionals from the Port Authority say that Mr. Wildstein had raised this issue of these toll lanes with him back in 2010. And why were there specific three lanes just for Fort Lee? So this is apparently, although that's the first I had heard of that, listening to the testimony. So the idea that somehow this is directly connected to the campaign, I think, is one of the things that's missing the boat here. And it wasn't Senator Barone's testimony or even Executive Director Foy's testimony. It was one of the professionals at the Port Authority who testified the other day who said that the first time Mr. Wildstein asked him about this was in the fall of 2010. So I think this was something, obviously, that was an ongoing concern and issue for Mr. Wildstein going all the way back to 2010. So that's why I think the connection is more a coincidence of timing than it is anything else. And certainly no one on my staff, nor Senator Barone or Mr. Wildstein, has given me an indication to the contrary, directly or publicly in the testimony that they've given. John. Never. No, it wasn't. And in fact, one of the things, John, I thought was interesting when you listened to Mr. Foy's testimony earlier this week, he said he didn't know about it until Friday. Now, that he's the executive director of the Port Authority. And no one brought it, if the traffic was so awful, no one brought it to his attention until the fifth day in. So if it didn't get to the executive director of Port Authority, you can be guaranteed it didn't get to me. A, factually, it did not get to me. And the first I ever heard about the issue was when it was reported in the press, which I think was in the aftermath of the leaking of Mr. Foy's email. I think that was the first I heard of it. But it was certainly well after the whole thing was over before I heard about it. Who hasn't gotten an answer? Yeah, Daryl.
So given all of that, are you satisfied with the explanation from O'Brien and David Wildstein?
I have to assume they're not lying, Daryl. I mean, you know, so, I mean, I don't think that Senator Barone would not tell the truth. I've known Bill for a long time, as many of you have. And I don't see Bill Barone as a guy who doesn't tell the truth. And he's never done that in his relationship with me. And I've known Bill probably for 15 years, longer probably. I think I first met Bill in 1994. So it's nearly 20 years now. I met him when I first ran for Freeholder in Morris County. So I've never known Bill Barone not to be a truth teller to me. And so I'm not going to assume he's not telling the truth now. I assume he is. Because, Darrell, in the end, people make mistakes. And I think what Bill said, Senator Barone said, when he got behind the microphone at that hearing, was that he apologized for not following the protocols and assured the committee that it wouldn't happen again. So to me, that's an admission of mistake, but it's certainly not something that's going to change my opinion of Senator Barone's tenure at the Port Authority, which I think was a very good one, where he fought very hard and got a lot of projects started for New Jersey that needed to be started for a long time, like the Bayonne Bridge and others. So I still have great respect for Senator Barone and consider him a good friend. Jenna. He was going to go anyway, Jenna. You clearly were not listening to me before. I had made the decision a while ago that I was going to move Deb to the Port Authority. That's why he announced his resignation today. He was going to go sometime in the next few weeks during the transition period when other people are moving. And I was giving Deb an opportunity to finish up her work here as the policy chief and have an orderly transition to Amy Craddock as the new deputy chief of staff. So this was all happening what I thought was going to be in the normal course of a 6 to 8 week transition from the election through the inaugural. Bill, you know, said that this has become such a distraction that he didn't want to cause any more problems. So he knew he was going, so he went today. And I appreciate his willingness to do that because, you know, he was going to go anyway. So don't connect the two. I had made the decision quite some time ago that 4 years at the Port Authority as the deputy ED was enough for anybody and that I wanted to give someone else a chance to do that job. I had already spoken weeks ago to Deb about her willingness to go to the Port Authority, and she said she was willing to do that. So that was decided weeks ago, and everybody involved in the inner workings of the governor's office knew that. I don't know enough about exactly what Mr. Foy did or did not do in the reaction to it. All I know about it is the memo that was leaked to the newspapers. And so I don't know enough about it to know whether I think he did everything he should have or did too much. It was never my analysis of it. And it's kind of akin to what I said to Terry. I mean, I think the analysis and review of Mr. Foy's performance on all things is really within the purview of the governor of New York because he's the guy who appoints him. The same way the performance and of Mr. Senator Barone is my purview more than it is Governor Cuomo's. Yeah, right there.
Mr. Barone identified one very specific mistake that he made with communication during his testimony. Do you believe any other mistakes were made?
Don't know. I think Senator Barone said he should have used the appropriate protocols within the Port Authority to make sure everybody knew what was going on. And if that's a mistake Bill thinks he made, I have no reason to believe that there are any other ones because he was questioned, I think, pretty carefully by Assemblyman Wisniewski's committee. So, but in the end, he admitted it was a mistake. And I think it's obvious that it was. And so, we move on from there. And I just, to me, it's not a, it's always disappointing, but never a shock that, you know, people will make mistakes. But at least, you know, Senator Barone owned up to the mistake and testified so publicly. David Cruz, you guys can't sit like right in front of behind each other anymore. It gets much too confusing.
You look so much alike.
Yeah, well, you both respond to the same name, so I'll just start calling you Cruz and Mathau from now on. We'll make it easier. Yes, David Cruz.
Is it, you're an attorney who's been around a scandal or two in your day. Is it your sense that all the questions have been answered about this? Or is there a bottom that we have to get to yet?
I don't think so. I've certainly, in response to Angie's question, said that I've spoken to everybody on my staff and asked anybody around here and my campaign manager if they knew anything more about this that we didn't already know, and they've told me no. And so, the chief of staff and the chief counsel assure me that they feel comfortable, that they have all the information we need to have. So I don't think so, David. But we're going to turn the page now. I mean, you know, we're sending new leadership over there in Deb, and I have absolute faith and confidence in her ability to be able to do the job and do it very aggressively and do it well for the people of the state and the region. And that's, I think, the most important thing. Heather? And National Democrats will make an issue about everything about me. So get used to the new world, everybody. You know, we're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy. That's the way it goes. So it's fine. I have not spoken directly to Senator Barone in the last period of time. He's been communicating with my chief of staff and my chief counsel. So I don't know. But I'm sure, since this comes as no surprise to him, I'm sure, you know, that he was already looking to line things up for himself in the aftermath, because he knew that this was going to come to a conclusion, you know, at the end of 2013, beginning of 2014. Who has an answer? Charlie Style.
During the testimony earlier this week, the bridge manager said
it's the first I heard of it, Charlie. And he's been there 20 something years. So I don't know if he's really worried about that. Either he hasn't spoken up for 20 something years, or it's really not as bad as he perceives it to be. I don't know. But certainly what I told Deb to do is to conduct herself the way she's always conducted herself with me. Aggressive, integrity, and effectiveness. And I'm sure that's what she'll do. And I don't think culture of fear fits into either one of those any of those three adjectives. I think we've complied with everything that they've asked for over time that's legally appropriate. And I'll leave that to the, you know, folks in the council's office of the Port Authority and the commissioners there to make the judgment about what it is they believe they're legally obligated to do, and I assume that they'll comply with the law. So certainly, you know, I have no reason to believe we won't do that. We've done it all the time anyway, including having, you know, Senator Barone show up without need of a subpoena, and then Executive Director Foy and two other folks in compliance with a subpoena. So I think when they've asked us to come and they didn't subpoena us, Senator Barone came, and when they subpoenaed for whatever reason, Executive Director Foy and the two folks underneath him, they complied. So I assume they'll review that. I'm not giving, you know, junior legal opinion here, okay? I assume that the lawyers at the Port Authority will review that with the commissioners, and they'll make whatever decisions they think are legally appropriate for them to make. I've never seen them not do it that way, so I can't imagine they wouldn't normally. Michael. I do. Yeah, I intend to keep David there. David Mathau.
Governor, some may find it curious, the timing of this, that we have Bridgegate, hullabaloo about it, and now you're saying that you have made the decision to replace Barone before he has offered to resign.
Yeah.
If he's doing such a good job, you know, why have you made that
decision
with regard to him and not Sansom, for instance?
Because 4 years is enough, I think, for... Remember, Senator Barone has the day-to-day responsibility of management of the New Jersey side of the Port Authority. That's significantly different than Chairman Sampson's role, which is not a day-to-day role. It's a part-time position, a part-time non-paid position. So the responsibilities of Chairman Sampson, even though he takes them very seriously and I know spends a significant amount of his time at the Port Authority, he's not a paid employee. He's there on a voluntary basis, and he's not responsible for day-to-day operations. I think if you look at the tenure of deputy executive directors of the Port Authority, Senator Barone has one of the longest tenures of any administration in recent time. Most of the time, you see people over there for a year and a half, 2 years, and governors move them through relatively quickly. I think it's a testimony to Senator Barone and his skills and ability and performance that I kept him there for 4 years. You know, I haven't had many people, you know, David, who've stayed in the same job for 4 years with me. You know, Bagger bailed out on me after 2 years, for God's sake. So, you know, you have people in high-pressure positions who decide they want to go and do something else. So I'm pleased that Senator Barone was willing to stay for 4 years, but I had made the judgment as a management position that 4 years of the day-to-day management of the Port Authority was enough and that someone else deserved a chance to have an opportunity to have that experience and do that job. And given that Deb was the person who really whipped the authorities into shape in this administration, I thought this would be a great next step in her career, both for her and for me. And that's why I asked her to do it weeks ago. It was right after the election, right? Yeah. I mean, right after the election, I asked her to do it before she left on vacation. I got her at a weak moment when she was really excited about leaving to go on vacation with her husband. And she said yes, and we moved on. So that's why, David. And no one has a lifetime entitlement to these jobs, A, and B, I really do think that circulating new management through there is good for the organization, but it doesn't reflect in any way on Senator Barone. I mean, I think what reflects on him is that he had the job for 4 years, which is a lot longer if you look historically at that position, which I'm sure you'll go back and look. It's people don't usually have it for that long a period of time, not typically. In the back, yeah. Yeah, I continue to be firmly in favor of in-state tuition for the children of undocumented folks who came here under, you know, no decision of their own. And I continue to be for that and will be for it. And I'm hoping that the legislature will see their way to not lard additional things on there that have nothing to do with tuition equality. I'll say to you again, when I stood before the Latino Leadership Alliance, I picked my words very carefully. I said, I am for tuition equality, and I am for tuition equality. I didn't say I was for tag grants. I said I was for tuition equality. This whole idea that there's one bill, only one bill, it could have only meant the Senate bill. Well, until yesterday, the Assembly bill was for tuition equality with no tag grant eligibility. So this whole idea that somehow, you know, I could only have possibly been talking about the Senate bill. Well, there was an Assembly bill at the very same time that didn't have anything to do with tuition assistance grants. I didn't say I was for the Senate bill. I said, and there were those of you who were there, I think Jenna was there and others, I said, I believe we need to work with the legislature towards tuition equality. Secondly, I'd refer you to my answer in the second debate, I think to a question that Michael asked me about this topic. And I was very specific. I said, we have to work with the legislature to find a budgetary reasonable way to provide tuition equality, and that I was hopeful we could work that out in lame duck. Well, let me ask you a question. If I was for the pending Senate bill, what would I be looking to work out? I said I was for a budgetarily responsible tuition equality for the state, and I still am. And if the legislature sends me a bill on tuition equality, I will sign it, happily sign it. If they send me things that lard other more expensive programs on top of it, then we're going to have a disagreement. And I hope that what we all decide to do is to put the interests of these dreamers ahead of politics. I want the dreamers to get tuition equality so that the children who achieve and want to go to college get an opportunity to do so at the same rate that other children who are living in this state have. But that doesn't include other program eligibility. And when they try to lard that on top of it, I'm going to object. And so I want all the folks out there to understand this position very clearly from me. I am for tuition equality. I believe that our with the recent investment we've made in our colleges and universities, that they are in a better position to be able to sustain the additional cost that it will be with them getting in-state tuition for more folks than they did before. And I think it's the right thing to do. Send me a clean bill, I'll sign it. Send me a bill that lards new spending on there and overreaches, then we're going to have an objection and we're going to have to figure out a way to work it out. But let me also be clear. I want to work it out because I want this to happen for the young men and women in this state. But I won't be taken to the cleaners. So let's all be fair with each other. You want compromise? Let's compromise. Let's be smart. Terry. No. You know, Terry, I know you're not a political expert, but I don't think this is probably the appropriate time for me to be delving into traffic study 2. I think at an appropriate time, if the Port Authority commissioners believe that this is something that needs to be studied with a full protocol-driven, expert-derived study, I wouldn't be opposed to that because I do think that three lanes for one town is too much, just inherently. Now, I'm no expert. This isn't me like going in, you know, with a clicker, you know, by the toll booth counting, okay? This is just my feel for it because, as I told you all when we spoke about this the last time, I didn't even know that there were three dedicated lanes and toll booths for Fort Lee until all this stuff happened. So, you know, I've just been one of the dopes who've been, you know, before I was governor, you know, riding, you know, in the regular lanes. Now that I'm governor, there's less of a concern about the traffic for me. But, Matt.
Governor, how do you reconcile, you've already told the truth, but Mr. Foy says there's no traffic study. He doesn't even know the one now.
I don't know. Matt, you really think, like, I want to, like, now go and say, so show me the traffic study so I can read it. The fact is, Bill Baroni, Senator Bill Baroni, is a friend of mine, has been, an outstanding public servant, both in his time in the legislature and his time at the Port Authority, and I have no reason not to believe him. And I don't interpret Mr. Foy's testimony the same way you do. He didn't say there wasn't one. I think what he said was he wasn't aware of one. That's very careful wording. Well, that may be part of the problem with the Port Authority. If they really need several years of debate to close a couple of lanes, that probably should be one of the things we should study. But the fact is, I think, because I was listening to a lot of this testimony, I think what they really said was, you didn't have to do it, but you could do it that way. I think what he said was, what my engineers would tell me is that there's lots of ways to figure this out. So, but he didn't say that you shouldn't do it this way. Well, but he said you could do it that way, too. As I remember hearing the testimony, he said my engineers would tell me there's lots of different ways to do it. This is one of them. There could be ways where we didn't have to close the lanes. I would just tell you as a normal driving person, right, that it would seem to me you can't understand the effect of the elimination of those lanes without seeing what the effect would then be on traffic in the town that used to use those lanes. Now, that's just common sense to me, so please, I'm not an engineer, and I don't have the ability to be one. But that makes sense to me. Now, I heard his testimony, and there may be other ways to do it. But that's why, in response to Terry's question, I'm not getting into another traffic study. Somebody wants to do another traffic study at the Port Authority, and they want to do it in the way that, in a couple of different ways that engineers might suggest, amen. Because I do think, having sat in that traffic from the main lanes a lot, especially as a New York Mets fan driving over there in a hurry to try to get to a game by 7:10, you know, I would love to have three more lanes to go through there. So I do think it's a question that should be examined at some point. But if I'm going to, I put it this way, Terry, I'm not going to call Samson today and say, hey, listen, Monday, let's get that traffic study going and see how we do. I think everybody needs some time to calm down and we need to then just have the professionals decide, is this something that makes sense? I'm not a professional. I'm just telling you my common sense layman view of it. Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, that's a little bit problematic, too, because the people who predominantly have access to those lanes are the three lanes that come from Fort Lee. And it's really hard, from what I'm told, to make your way over to that from the normal traffic lanes. That it really takes... Now, listen, these are New Jersey drivers, so maybe a bunch of them do make the daring three-lane maneuver over. But I think most people don't. I think most people stay straight in that kind of traffic. So I understand it's possible to access those toll lanes from the regular lanes. But what I'm told, at least, by folks up there is that it's difficult to do it, and that if that access was taken away and it was cleared up, that it would be much easier to do it. Again, this is secondhand stuff. I haven't done it myself, but that's what I'm told. Heather. You know what? I don't want to second guess the Inspector General. If the Inspector General believes that he should look into it, then he has every right to look into it. I mean, I don't have any problem with it. I don't know what basis upon which he made the decision, so I can't really evaluate critically, Heather, whether I think it's necessary or not. But I do know that the Inspector General has every right to do investigations on Port Authority matters, and I certainly wouldn't criticize him for it. But I'm not going to put my imprimatur of approval on it because I don't know what the basis was for him making that judgment. Jenna. I think he said he made a mistake. I mean, you know, Jenna, I know there's got to be a time. I'm sure it probably is unlikely, but that you made a mistake in a story. By definition, you didn't do it on purpose. It was a mistake. And it's difficult to explain why you didn't do something when you didn't not do it on purpose, right? So Bill Baroni, Senator Baroni has characterized this as a mistake. I am not curious. Believe me, I've heard more about this than I ever wanted to hear. So if you think my curiosity isn't satiated, my curiosity is more than satiated at the moment on this topic. Matthew? I'm responsible for everything that happens in this government, Matt. So sure, absolutely. I'll take my share, too. I didn't know anything about it, but I'm responsible. For every person who acts in this government, I am ultimately responsible. If you want to hear me say that, I'm happy to say it because it's true. I'm ultimately responsible for every person that I put in this government and the actions they take. That's different, obviously, than direct responsibility, but ultimate responsibility, sure. And so, you know, I understand that when things go well, you know, you get credit sometimes for things that you don't really deserve the complete credit for. And when things go poorly, sometimes you get blame for things that you don't completely deserve blame for. But that's the nature of this job. And I got broad shoulders. I'm fine. David Cruz? Topics, David Cruz?
Yes. Governor, do you have any comment on this report by the Fair Share Housing Center?
You heard my answer on that before, right? Now, listen. There is no consideration of race or ethnicity in determining who gets any grants through Sandy Relief. And it's just another make-work report from a hack group that's looking for attention. That's all it is. There is absolutely no consideration, David. There's no consideration of that by anyone in this government. And so statistical anomalies occur, but there's no race and ethnicity is not considered in the distribution of Sandy grants, never has been, never will be. Angie?
Yeah, so if you believe do you think that the Fort Lee mayor who wrote that you thought it might be punitive or Foy, whose account differed from Rowan and do you think those guys are lying?
No, well, first of all, I think the Fort Lee mayor then later backed off that comment. From what I understand, and later said no, he really had no basis to make that statement. So I think he obviously changed his mind from when he said something to something else. And I don't think Foy ever said anything that was inconsistent with what Baroni said. I think all Foy ever said was that he didn't know why it was done and he hadn't been informed, and that it didn't follow protocols. And I think that's consistent with what Barone said. I don't think Foy said anything differently than that in the testimony. And I listened, not to all of it, because I had some meetings, but I listened to most of it, and I certainly got briefed on the accounts of it afterwards. And I don't think that Mr. Foy said anything inconsistent with what Senator Barone said. And in fact, as I heard his testimony, he was laudatory of Mr. Barone and said he thought that Senator Barone did a great job and that he enjoyed working with him and that he hoped to continue to work with him. So I don't see any inconsistencies between that. No, Bill Barone said that he didn't communicate to everybody that he was supposed to. I think it's completely consistent. Barone says his biggest mistake was not communicating the green lighting of the study throughout the agency. Foy says, I didn't know about the study. That seems to me to be completely consistent. What would be inconsistent is if Barone said, I told Foy, and Foy said, no, you didn't, and I didn't know. Barone said he didn't communicate, and Foy said he didn't know. Seems to me to be perfectly and completely consistent, the two. Michael. I oppose committing the sales tax, and I've said that before. I think it's a bad idea. And if they're going to do that, they better come up with another way to replace that revenue or cut spending in that amount. Because you keep committing, and this is what Democrats do. They did this, as you know, Michael, with a portion of the sales tax back in 2006. And it is injurious to a governor's ability to have flexibility to budget appropriately and effectively. And it's grandstanding. Have some guts. You know, they know that that's the inappropriate way to do it. But it's the easy way to do it. Belly up to the bar and come up with a real idea, not one of those. Because all that does, and I'll be very clear, they do that, I'll be the one to decide where the spending gets cut to pay for it. And I don't suspect they're going to like where I'm going to decide to cut. Math out.
Anything specifically, Governor, that you must be accomplished in lame duck?
I think it's a pretty quiet lame duck, David, and I think the reason why is that there's really no changes. You know, it's not like the lame duck 4 years ago where Governor Corzine was frantically trying to stuff through everything, he could before the evil empire arrived in Trenton, you know. It's not one of those things. The governor's staying the same. The legislature is predominantly, in numbers at least, staying the same with a couple of minor personality changes and a new speaker. So I don't think that Speaker Oliver's going to try to jam some stuff through in her last, you know, few weeks here as speaker to try to do anything. So I don't see a real urgency to lame duck this time because it's really just a date on the calendar now. It's not any major changes. If you're having a change of administration here or a change of majority in one of the houses, then I think you'd see a much different and a kind of frenetic pace. But here, things are essentially staying the same. So it's just a date on the calendar. We'll move on to a new session on January 14th. And so I don't feel any sense of urgency. We'll try to get some stuff done. I've met with the Senate President. I've met with the Speaker, with the incoming Speaker, to talk about what he may have planned for the 14th and forward. And we're having some good conversations. I met yesterday with Senator Kaine on lame duck agenda specifically to get what his views are. I met earlier in the week with Assemblyman Bramnick to discuss the same thing. So we're all talking to each other, and I wouldn't expect any type of like late night frenetic activity like you had 4 years ago. I think it'll be more kind of just the normal pace of things, with the exception maybe things that might expire by the end of the term, whether they're going to try certain overrides or other things that would expire. That's going to be up to them. But I think it'll be the normal course of kind of legislating. Heather? I don't know. I read a lot of different opinions from the advocates out there about whether they want additional legislation or don't want additional legislation. You all know my position. My position is very clear on this issue, has been for years. But beyond that, I don't want to comment on anything that might come from the legislature because it seems to me, Heather, there's so many different ideas out there from advocates and from different legislators that it's probably a little early for me to get involved in the mix and giving opinions on any particular ideas. Let's see when and if they come up with anything, and when and if they do, then I'll give you my view as we get closer. David? Yeah, now we're into the sweet spot. Thank you very much. Well, I do think for Yankee fans, it's very interesting that Curtis Granderson's coming to the Mets and wearing Babe Ruth's number. I think that's particularly interesting. Listen, as a Met fan, the fact that they're doing anything in the offseason to improve the team is a moment of great relief for me. And to the extent that we can move north of 74 wins next year as a result of some of this stuff, it'll be great, and I hope that Colon at 40 years old, like I hope he's really staying healthy in the offseason, takes care of himself so that he's ready to pitch 200 innings in the spring. But I'm happy with all the things they've done in the offseason because I think every one of them gives us the chance to improve the team. And as somebody who spends a lot of time watching these games, seeing some better baseball would make my summer a lot more pleasant. John Reitmeier. Yeah, this seems to be the eternal Senate Assembly debate, right? Assembly controlled by the folks in the North, Senate controlled by the folks in the South. John, I'll let them fight it out. If they come to some consensus, then I'll be happy to consider the consensus position they come to. But at this point, this seems to be kind of an annual rite of passage, right, the last number of years. And let's see if the legislature comes to any consensus. If they do, I'm happy to consider it. If they don't, I'll be happy to move on to something else. Jenna. Don't know. I'll have to check into it. Don't know. Charlie.
On the in-state tuition, you made an emphasis raised some concerns you had about the TAG grants, but a lot of people that support the legislation, the Senate version of the bill, say this whole concern about out-of-state people coming, exploiting a loophole that for boarding schools is really red herring, and it reflects only
No, listen, I want us to do everything we can not to make us a magnet. I think the biggest thing, but not the only thing, Charlie, in the legislation that makes us a magnet is the TAG eligibility. But I think there are ways for us to clean up the out-of-state problem that would not run afoul of federal law, and I'm ready to work with the legislature on that in a way that I think would do no violence to people's ability to be able to access tuition equality. So by not mentioning it, I don't want to say that I've abandoned it in any way, because I haven't, but I do believe there's a way for us, and I'm going to get into the legal details here, but I think there's a way for us, according to my counsel, to be able to deal with that in a way that wouldn't run afoul of federal law and would go towards what even the sponsors have said they don't want. They don't want New Jersey to become a magnet. And I think the TAG grants is the biggest part of that, but I also think that the out-of-state issue is a part of that, and we don't want to lard things onto this that go beyond the principle that we stand for, which is we're for tuition equality. And I want the kids who have been here years and years and years and who we've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to educate through the elementary, middle school, and high school system to be able to go to college in New Jersey at an affordable rate, if that's what they choose to do, because that's good for New Jersey's future and it's good for those children's futures and their families. I want to do that. But I am not, Charlie, you know what's going on here. You know, give them your belt, they want your pants. Okay? And I'm just not going to get into that game.
Yeah. Are you in compromised negotiations with leadership over this
bill? Let me just say, as usual, I don't characterize my conversations with legislative leadership, but let me just say that we talk regularly about a whole range of issues. And I think I've signaled very clearly, standing behind this microphone twice now, that I'm more than happy to reach compromise. But I am not going to be taken to the cleaners. So I don't think I can be any clearer than that, Charlie. You know, Charlie, when I'm not willing to compromise, I say no. And you've heard me say that plenty of times behind this microphone. So I'm willing to work with people, but I am not willing to be taken to the cleaners on this, and I'm not going to be taken to the cleaners on it, because if I get taken to the cleaners, the taxpayers get taken to the cleaners. Someone in this building's got to worry about the taxpayers. It's my job to do that. Anybody else? Okay. Yes. Sure. As for the Super Bowl, no, I don't. Maria, have I been asked to do ads for the Super Bowl? No, I don't think so. No one's asked me. We are examining a new round of tourism advertisement to do. Hopefully earlier than we were able to do it last time, because I think we'll have the money to be able to do it. The shore advertising, tourism advertising, yes. So we're examining that, and I have the folks at the EDA and folks at tourism working together to come up with a plan to present to me, and I've asked them for that plan to be presented to me before the end of the month. We don't know exactly how we're going to do it yet, Jenna. So that's, I'm asking them to work with the people at HUD, to work with our state budgetary officers to see the best way for us to do it. But I think the one thing that we knew from last time, and we told you all this, that we thought we were starting very late, that was because we didn't have the federal funding until, you know, near the end of May. We're in a different situation this time, and I think the testimony you heard yesterday, I believe, is consistent with that the folks in the tourism industry love the ads, but said they started too late. And thought the optimal time for us to start with that is January or February. I agree with them. Wish we could have done that last year, but, you know, we didn't have the federal funding authorized and distributed to us in time to do it. So I've said to my folks months ago, we've got to get a plan in place by the end of December if we're going to do tourism advertising, to get that tourism advertising started, you know, late January, early February, when people start to make their summer vacation plans. And I think that's really important for us to do. I'd like to be able to do it, and we're working on ways to pay for it. So stay tuned. We'll have more to say about it, and I should have a plan to me from EDA and the tourism folks, by the end of this month. Matt?
This has been obviously something of a distraction, just spent an hour out of here. Were you angry once you realized what happened here?
I wouldn't characterize myself as angry, Matt. I don't like when mistakes are made because of the question you asked me, right? Like, are you ultimately responsible? Yeah. I mean, it's okay when I make the mistakes, you know, that I'm responsible. When others make the mistakes, it bothers me. But I think angry would probably be a little bit too strong a word. Bothered probably would be the better word. You know, I was bothered by it. But, you know, folks around here, when I'm angry, you tend to be able to see it. I don't hide it all that well. I'm not angry, but I'm bothered when people make mistakes that wind up reflecting poorly on their performance, because their performance is the performance of this administration. And so I'd rather have us all doing things well. And so I'm bothered whenever that happens. But, as I said before, I commend Senator Barone for his service for his 4 years there. I know how hard that job is, and he worked very hard at it. So did Mr. Wildstein at the job he had. It's unfortunate for them that a mistake got made near the end of their tenure. But it's just the way life works sometimes. So, no, I wouldn't call myself angry. But, you know, bothered, yeah. I mean, I'd rather not be doing this. But this is the job. So, you know, when you lead, this is what you got to deal with, and sometimes. But other times, you know, I'm standing behind here when the folks that work for me have done extraordinary things, Herculean things, that I get to smile and stand here and put my arms around them and take credit for. So if you're going to do that, you got to be prepared to do this too. And that's okay. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Yeah?
Why do you think you've been blamed?
Have I been? I don't think I've been blamed. Well, listen, there will be people politically who point fingers at me all the time from the DNC down. I don't feel, let me put it this way. I don't feel blamed for this at all because I had nothing to do with it. But in answer to Matt's question, I'm ultimately responsible for anything that anybody does in my administration, whether I appointed the people or whether they're people who are career people. You know, you're the governor, you're in charge, and you have to take responsibility. But that's very different than feeling blamed. I don't feel blamed. I don't feel put upon. You don't hear me up here whining or complaining. Like, this is my job. I got to take responsibility for the things that happen on my watch. I'm happy to do that. It's part of the job. So believe me, when I feel like I've been wronged, you'll know it. You know, I'm not very good at hiding any of my emotions. Okay, and I don't try to. So if I really felt like I was being blamed wrongfully here or something, I don't feel blamed. I feel responsible because anytime mistakes are made by people who are in my administration, the governor is ultimately responsible for all of that. And like I said, it's a double-edged sword. Some days that's really great because there are things that go on around here that I don't know about or that I don't know the seriousness of them and how well they're progressing. And then all of a sudden, people come into my office and say, guess what? We've been able to accomplish X. We get to go out and announce it. Well, I probably have done very little work personally on that, and I get credit for it. Now, when mistakes are made that I have nothing to do with, you know, I have to take responsibility for that too. And I think that more people in public life should do that. You know, this is the way it is. This is the way public life works. And am I bothered by it? Sure. This is not the way I necessarily wanted to spend my Friday morning. But it's the way it goes. You know, so you don't have to worry. Nobody has to pray for me over the weekend. I'll be fine. Yes, sir.
You're a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Yes, I am.
How excited would you be to see the Cowboys make it to the Super Bowl?
I'd be both surprised. I'd both be excited and amazed, given their performance last week where they didn't stop the Chicago Bears once during a game. So I'm just hopeful that the Cowboys can hold on and make it to the playoffs, although they're going to have a tough time with the Eagles. So we'll see what happens. But if they came, oh, listen, if you're the governor of the state where the Super Bowl is and the team you root for makes it, that'd be pretty good. So I'd be excited and thrilled if they did. But let me put it this way. I'm not counting on it, given the defensive performance of the last few weeks. I'm not counting on the Cowboys making it to East Rutherford on February 2nd. So as much as I've enjoyed this time with all of you and would love to spend more, I'm sure I have to go in there and do something. I'm going to call it a day and call it a weekend for all of you and for me. Thank you for coming. I want to once again thank Deb, whose legs are probably asleep at this point, for being willing to answer the call again. Let me let you know, every time over the last nearly 12 years that Deb and I have known each other, every time I've asked her to step forward and take on a task for me, she has taken that task on and done it extraordinarily well. One last thing, because I have to clear this up for all of you, because there's been some writing about this. She's from Livingston, too. So don't think that this makes some enormous cabal or conspiracy, but she is from Livingston, too, but significantly younger than me. So we'll see you all soon. Have a good weekend.